Today we'll continue looking at the importance of trusting God by looking at his faithful reliability. Being faithful is good and being reliable is good, but God has both, which is why I call this faithful reliability. Let's start in Deuteronomy chapter 7. Here in Deuteronomy chapter 7, well, I guess I better get there before I start reading it. Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy. Here in Deuteronomy 7 and verse 7. The Lord did not set his love upon you, nor choose you because you were more in number than any people, for you were the fewest of all people. So, in a democracy where we live, people have to look at what the majority thinks. That's the way our system is set up, and you can argue about whether people spend too much time looking at polls and too much time pandering to the voters, but at the end of the day, what the most people vote for is what happens in our society. That's the way our Constitution is set up. But God doesn't work that way. God doesn't look for where am I going to get the most votes and where are the most people going to support me. He looks for what his will is and where people will trust him. And it says here in Deuteronomy 7:7, the Lord did not set his love upon you, nor choose you, because you were more in number than any people, for you were the fewest of all people. But because the Lord loved you, and because he would, or he wanted, to keep the oath which he had sworn unto your fathers, hath the Lord brought you out with a mighty hand, and redeemed you out of the house of bondmen, the house of slavery, from the hand of Pharaoh, king of Egypt. Know therefore that the Lord thy God, he is God, the what? The faithful God, which keepeth covenant. You know, covenants are agreements, contracts. God had an agreement to take care of his people. He is the faithful God which keepeth covenant and mercy with them that love him and keep his commandments to 1,000 generations. So even in the Old Testament, even under the law, people simply loved God and lived his word. God was faithful, kept his commandments to 1,000 generations. So that's sort of the baseline when we're thinking about God. He is faithful. People will come and go. And as much as we might try to be perfect and faithful, I mean, like even Peter, who was sort of Jesus Christ's right-hand man, he tried so hard to stand for Jesus Christ. But when Jesus Christ was imprisoned and being beaten, he just didn't have the nerve to stand up to everybody that accused him of being a friend of Jesus Christ. It was just too scary. And I understand that. We've all had challenges where we wanted to stand for God or walk for God, and we just got scared or tricked out of it. So not to get down on ourselves, because we're human, and God loves us and forgives us, but to just realize in contrast how wonderfully faithful God is. And he's the one we can trust in. So rather than spend all our time looking at our own shortcomings, which we all have, how much better to focus on God's faithfulness, knowing that he'll help us, he'll work with us. Think of people like Gideon. He was so scared, he was so worried, he didn't know what to do. He just asked God for a wet fleece one morning and a dry fleece one morning. Asked God to, you know, show him that they would win the battle, and God told him to go down and listen in on whoever it was, the Amorites or the Moabites, and he found out how scared they were. And God just worked with him. God helped him. Well, God will work with us and help us. And he didn't even have the Spirit of God born within like we do. Yet God still loved him and helped him. So we shouldn't be focusing on our shortcomings or even our problems. We should be focusing on God's faithfulness. He loves us. He cares about us. He's faithful to take care of us. Let's go to 1 Kings chapter 17. One simple example of God's faithfulness. God gave Elijah the very unpopular job of praying that it wouldn't rain for a few years and then going and telling the king that it wasn't going to rain. And then, of course, the king blamed Elijah, made him public enemy number one, sent ambassadors and armies and guards everywhere looking for him, trying to kill him, and God hit him. God gave him the job, but then God provided what he needed. Well, there are times where God will ask you to do something that just may seem unbelievable to you, either because you can't figure out how to do it, you can't figure out how to pay for it, you can't figure out how to get the time, you can't figure out how to get the energy. Emotionally, it's overwhelming. There could be all kinds of reasons why, but it's just a tough thing. But you know it's the will of God. Well, if God asks you to do something, and you pray and act on what he tells you, he will find a way to come through with all that's needed, no matter what it is. If you need money, he'll give you the money. If you need time, he'll give you the time. If you need strength, he'll give you the strength. If you need emotional support and stability because you're a little waffly, he'll find that somehow. He'll either work something in your heart or put somebody across your path that can help you, or he'll find another way. Because God is God. He'll find a way to take care of you. Well, what God asked Elijah to do was basically, you know, to be like, if, you know, I mean, try to picture it. You walk into your town hall and say, the electricity and the water won't work here until I say so. And then you walk out the door, and all of a sudden the electricity and the water pumps all stop. And nobody has water or electricity. And of course they blame you because you're the one that said it. And they send the police out, they pull in the State Highway Patrol, maybe bring in the National Guard, the FBI, everybody's looking for you because you ruined the town. Well, that's sort of what Elijah did. When he said there would be no water, that meant everything came to a standstill. There were no crops, he couldn't grow anything, he had no food. It was just terrible. But that's what God told Elijah to do, was to pray for that and to tell the king. And as a result, life got very hard for him. But God is bigger than whatever the king is worried about. And God can provide and take care. So let's hear, look here in 1 Kings 17, verse 1. And Elijah the Tishbite, who was of the inhabitants of Gilead, said unto Ahab, as the Lord God of Israel liveth, before whom I stand, there shall not be dew nor rain these years, but according to my word. So there will be no rain, unless I say so. Verse 2, and the word of the Lord came unto him, saying, get thee hence, and turn thee eastward, and hide thyself by the brook Cherith, that is before Jordan. And it shall be that thou shalt drink of the brook, and I have commanded the ravens to feed thee there. If you ever imagine God's not capable of taking care of you, because you got a problem, and you can only think of one, two, or three ways to fix it, and none of them are working, and you're giving up, just remember, God found ravens. He got birds to become caterers. He somehow got a flock of birds to bring Elijah the food he needed. I can't even conceive how that would happen. Where would they get the food? What kind of food would it be? Would it be something he ate, liked? Would they bring it on time? You can just go on and on. How would that happen? I have no idea, but God is God. He commanded the ravens, and they obeyed. Let's look at that again. Verse 4. And it shall be that thou shalt eat of the drink of the brook, and I have commanded the ravens to feed thee there. So he went and did according unto the word of the Lord, for he went and dwelt by the brook Cherith, that is before Jordan. And the ravens brought him bread and flesh in the morning. Where did they get the bread? Was there like a bakery open at 5 a.m. that they flew in? I'm being facetious, I know, but I have no idea how God would have done that, but he did. So, at any rate, verse 6, the ravens brought him bread and flesh in the morning and bread and flesh in the evening, and he drank of the brook. And it came to pass after a while that the brook dried up, because there had been no rain in the land. And the word of the Lord came unto him, saying, arise, get thee to Zarephath, which belongeth to Zidon, and dwell there. Behold, I have commanded a widow woman there to sustain me. So, God found a different gig for him. He found a different place he could go where he would eat. So he arose and went to Zarephath. And when he came to the gate of the city, behold, the widow woman was there gathering of sticks. And he called to her and said, fetch me, I pray thee, a little water in a vessel that I may drink. And as she was going to fetch it, he called to her and said, bring me, I pray thee, a morsel of bread in thine hand. And she said, verse 12, as the Lord thy God liveth, I have not a cake, but a handful of meal in a barrel, and a little oil in a cruse. And behold, I am gathering two sticks, that I may go in and dress it for me and my son, that we may eat it and die. She didn't have a very positive outlook. She had enough food left for one small meal, She was going to cook the meal, share it with her son, then they were just going to sit down and die. So they were sort of at the end of their rope. We've all had tough times, you know, financially and challenges and unexpected bills and unexpected setbacks. That happens to everybody. But I've never quite gotten to the place where I had like enough for one snack and then I was going to die. Never really gotten close to that. Thank God. Well, this woman did. And Elijah, verse 13, said unto her, "Fear not, go and do as thou hast said, but make me thereof a little cake first." And that's a great example. Like Kevin was praying, you know, that God would bless people for their giving. It's so clear throughout the scriptures that when you give to God first, God will bless you back abundantly. So although this woman barely had enough to survive, the word of the Lord was, give some, oh, no, I'm sorry,